We're back on KCRW's Good Food. I'm Evan Kleiman. Now we turn to a food writer who went on a whirlwind tour of six continents in search of the world's best restaurants.
I remember saying to my husband, this is not going to be travel in the normal sense. What it will be is a recon mission to see where I want to go back to.
That's Besha Rodel of the New York Times. You might remember her as the LA Weekly's former restaurant critic. Over the course of 4 months earlier this year, she traveled more than 100,000 miles and spent nearly 300 hours in the air. It was a mission to find 30 of the world's best restaurants for the first ever joint list between Travel and Leisure and Food and Wine. Besha was just back in town from where she lives, now in Australia, so I wanted to hear more about this fascinating adventure. Thank you so much for coming here.
I'm so glad to be here.
When did you get the call that you were chosen to take this culinary odyssey?
It was in February of this year, and Hunter Lewis, who's the editor-in-chief of Food & Wine, said that he wanted to get on a call with me and that the editor-in-chief of Travel & Leisure would also be on this call. I had no idea what it was about. I thought maybe that it was an assignment. I'm a freelancer, so that was good for me. And they called and explained what they wanted to do and asked if I might be able to do it. It was not something that I thought that I could do initially, honestly, because it required me to kind of blow up my whole life for 4 months and put my regular gig on hold, which is with the New York Times in Australia, and didn't know if they would be up for it, and just didn't know if I could leave my family for that long and all of those things. So I took a couple of days to think about it and make a lot of phone calls and finally figured out that I could do it. But it was shocking. I think I was in shock for those couple of days after I got that call.
One of the things that I find fascinating about this assignment you had is that you didn't do it alone.
Right.
And the list of colleagues who helped you put together a list so you could build an itinerary is an unbelievable list. It's like a dream panel in a way.
Yeah, it really is. And that is mainly thanks to Food & Wine and Travel & Leisure and the reputation that they have and the work that those editors did reaching out to the right people. I mean, and it really is an international list, which I'm really happy about. It's a very diverse list. And some of them were people that I, you know, said, if I'm going to do this, I absolutely need to ask these people. And you could probably tell who those are if you look at it. They're the LA people. So Bill Esparza and Chad Colby were both people that I specifically said, okay, I don't know anybody who knows these regions of the world better than these people.
But it was also Alex Atala,
yes,
and Ruth Reichel.
Yes.
And I mean, it was just Sophie Peek.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just a great, sort of one of those, if you wanted to have a last dinner party, who would you invite? Kind of like one
yeah,
of those lists.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
One thing also that I find really interesting and intriguing is that there are no rankings or numbers. The restaurants are listed alphabetically. So you say in your article, what this list celebrates is cuisine and culture, not rankings and numbers. Talk a little bit about that.
The way that it was described to me on that first call was really, if you are going to a city, a country, it's the place that you want to tell all of your friends, oh, you have to go eat here. And quite often that isn't the fancy restaurant. Sometimes it is, but the way that I've kind of been describing it to people is you might travel to Copenhagen just to go eat at Noma. That is a thing that many international travelers do. You probably aren't going to Mumbai necessarily to eat at a fancy restaurant. That's not necessarily the reason why you would go there. There's so much culture and food culture in so many cities and countries in the world that are not based on that kind of very high-end culture. And so I think that the idea that we were looking for places that spoke to the soul of those locations, and I wanted to make sure that if you went and sat in any of these restaurants, you would really feel like you were in that place. And that made some locations difficult, to be frank, but I think it was the right way to go about it.
And you spoke very openly about how the assignment affected you physically. And so the fact that you had to land, like in Cusco,
mm-hmm,
and have altitude sickness and, like, in a couple of hours, get in a car and drive somewhere to eat. I mean, many of us would have just said, oh, no.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that it's funny. Some people see this and say, oh my God, that's a dream job. How can I be your assistant next time? And some people, I think more the professional leaders that I know, understand how crazy that is to try to do when I was only in most countries for 24 hours. But that's the thing that makes it a job, right? I mean...
but it also gives a different kind of focus to your writing, because for a place to reveal itself to you when you're that impaired.
Yes. And I do think that that was the beauty and the magic of this assignment for me, was that I was exhausted. I was existentially not hungry. And yet there were still moments of kind of pure joy. And it was that kind of pure joy that's like very specific to travel for me, where you are just in the place and it's not necessarily familiar, but it's revealed itself to you through a beautiful bite of food or a beautiful meal. And that still gets me in my own city occasionally, but that feeling is still pure magic.
So there's a place on the list that's actually the first one on the list, because it begins with the letter A and you opted to do it alphabetically, Alfonsina in Oaxaca.
Yeah.
Which, reading the list for me, was the most problematic, because I was just, it's the kind of place where in a way you don't want to deliver the demi-mondaine world of international eaters to this sort of pristine, lovely family space in Oaxaca.
Right. That was certainly a concern of mine. I also didn't want to be so paternalistic that I was deciding that this chef wasn't, you know, ready for that. He is somebody who has worked in really, really well-known restaurants in Oaxaca and in Mexico City. So he understands the type of fame that there is out there in the chef world, and that is his ambition. I don't think he wants to remain an unknown chef in his mom's house in Oaxaca forever, which is where the restaurant's based. But it is the one restaurant on the list, because it's so undiscovered and because it's just in a neighborhood, in a house, that I did feel a responsibility to make sure that it was something that he did want, even if I probably couldn't express exactly how much it would change their life and that business. But I did my best. I reached out to him and said, I want to include you on this list, but I'm worried that it is going to change things for you in a way that you might not even be able to really anticipate. And he said, thank you, but this is an incredible honor, and I want it. And again, he's an ambitious guy who wants that kind of recognition.
So tell us a bit about that place.
Oh, it's so beautiful. So it's not in Oaxaca proper, the city. It's quite near the airport out in this neighborhood, and the house is down a dirt road. Like, the cab driver who took me was so confused about where we were going. You know, there's loose dogs everywhere and whatever. You make a reservation usually through Instagram or WhatsApp and just speak directly with the chef. He serves breakfast most days and then a 5-course lunch. And his mother is also very involved in the business. So she does more of the traditional stuff. She makes all of the tortillas on the comal that's right in the kitchen where you sit and eat. But his food is incredibly refined and would not be out of place in any fine dining restaurant, I think, anywhere in the world. But there's a lot of locals who come and eat there and buy their tortillas from the mother. And he's a really young guy, but I do think that he's like one of these guys who's, you know, next superstar.
What a singular experience for you to have that experience before the blow up.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and perhaps this is unfair, but I'm going to ask you anyway. So while you're on this odyssey, was there a place where you got to and you just said, you know what, I'm just going to stay an extra day?
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, everywhere, because I just didn't want to get back on a plane. But Slovenia was really the one that got me, partly because I didn't know what I was getting myself into. Like, this trip was so intense and I was in a new country almost every day. And quite frankly, like, I knew my schedule, but I was not thinking, what is Slovenia going to be like? What is the airport going to be like? You know, any of that. So I just showed up in a couple of countries kind of completely unprepared for what it might be in a way that you never would if you were traveling on your own. And got to the airport and couldn't get a cab to take me to the hotel that I was staying at because it was 2 hours away. So that made sense. So then I had to rent a car, which I hadn't planned on doing. And I ended up just driving over these mountains. And Slovenia is the most outrageously beautiful place that I've ever seen. And I had no concept of it before that. I hadn't thought about it. It was just kind of this revealing itself to me as I'm driving over these mountains. And it was springtime and there was little flowers everywhere. And, you know, these old stone, beautiful towns clinging to the side of mountains. And it's like alpine fairyland there.
Did that restaurant make the cut?
Yes, that's Hisa Franco.
A restaurant and a chef that's been featured on Chef's Table.
Yes. Yeah.
So there's that.
Yes.
Is there anything you'd really like to share?
I was very adamant that we get something from LA on this list. And I came back more than once because the first time around, I wasn't sure that I had found something.
And what did you find?
I ended up going with Ennaka, which is not that surprising for me. The last thing I did for LA Weekly before I left was the best restaurants in LA, and I named Ennaka the best restaurant in LA at that point in time. But that was a few years ago, so there was definitely things that had opened since then that we considered. But going back there and having that experience again, I mean, it's just such a beautiful experience. And when I started thinking about it, such an amazing expression of what makes LA so special as a food city. There's a lot of ways you could go with that. But to me, having somebody who has roots in Japanese culture, but is such a Southern California girl, Nikki Nakayama, the chef there, and brings so much of that to it as well, is a really beautiful distillation of what makes Los Angeles so fantastic.
And of course, now home for you is Melbourne.
Yes.
So it's not surprising that you found something in Melbourne to put on the list.
Yeah, and we considered really a lot of things in Australia. I think Australia got more nominations than it should have, given you know, how big it is of population compared to other parts of the world. The reason I chose Attica is that I think it expresses Australia, and it has such a sense of place. That is not a restaurant that could be anywhere else in the world. Ben Shuri, the chef there, is really dedicated to using native ingredients. Native ingredients in Australia these days, it's a bit of a trend. And so what's happening is people are taking these ingredients that have been used by the indigenous people of Australia for thousands of years and kind of throwing them on top of Asian food or that kind of thing. And Ben is really committed to seeking out the knowledge that comes along with those ingredients and also making sure that when you're eating that food, you understand whose knowledge that is. So that's really important to me. But the first time I ate there was quite emotional for me. And as an Australian person, I think that was part of why. But Ruth Reichel said the same thing when she nominated it, that eating there is an emotional experience.
Well, it's so lovely to just get to see you face to face.
Yeah, I know.
Something that very few people get to do. And I'm grateful that you were the person to take on this task.
Well, thank you so much.
That's Besha Rodel, Australia Fair columnist for the New York Times and former restaurant critic of the LA Weekly. We've been talking about her experience traveling the world to find the world's 30 best restaurants for travel and leisure and Food and Wine magazines.